The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times and the Washington Post. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And on the first day of the new year, Happy New Year, and as we step into this year, we begin today's journey on Armchair Traveler with 9 bucket list trips to get peak hygge this winter. Now, we'll tell you more about that in just a moment, but writer Ali Wunderman provides snapshots of special places to go in winter in this article, and it appeared in the December 7th, 2022 issue of the Washington Post. So let's see what Ali has for us. And the dateline is Henningsvær Village in Lofoten Islands in Nordland County, Norway. It can only mean one thing now that temperatures are dropping and nights are getting longer. Cozy season is here. The arrival of winter heralds automatic permission to tap into the Danish term hygge, which describes a feeling of coziness and comfort. Basically, it's time to get comfy to the point of bliss. And should you encounter this word hygge, obviously we're doing it phonetically, it is spelled kind of strangely, H-Y-G-G-E, hygge, okay? Hygge's championing of snug contentment has become the preeminent goal for how to pass the chilliest months, and for good reason. Some classic elements of the ideal hygge setting include a cozy fireplace, dim candlelight, fluffy blankets, warm beverages, gently falling snow outside, and good company, said Signe Thorup, senior relations manager at De Angelitier Hotel in Copenhagen. What better way to spend a cold, icy winter? Well, from Alaska to New England to remote Norwegian islands, here's where you should tap into your inner Scandinavian, and remember to pack a pair of wool socks. Our first place is Copenhagen. As the originator of hygge, Denmark is the first place to go when seeking the cozy life. Head to the luxurious De Angelitier Hotel, which has been providing a hygge home base in Copenhagen since 1755. For nearly 300 years, they have mastered the art of warming people up while the Nordic winter rages outside. While faux fur throws a weight in the guest rooms, it's the upper lobby where you will find a picture-perfect old fireplace surrounded by comfy chairs, candelabras with real candles, best enjoyed with the hotel's famous house-made glögg, and that's a warm, spiced wine. It's also worth braving the cold and dark to see how Copenhagen dresses up in the famous Tivoli Gardens for the festive season. Next, we go to Fogo Island, Newfoundland, Canada. Modern architecture perched on the shores of Newfoundland? Check. In-room fireplaces and hand-quilted blankets? Check. Community-based philosophy in which monetary surpluses are reinvested locally? Super check. Fogo Island Inn encapsulates a Scandinavian way of thinking from the decor to the business operations, but it is all Canadian. Once guests arrive to this island, or off an island, they can curl up with a pair of binoculars to watch the seabirds tempt the cold sea waters below, or unwind in the sauna and hot tubs after a day of berry picking, boat building, or petting the resident Newfie dog. Next up is Nordland County, Norway. Wintertime in a picturesque northern Norwegian fjord easily lends itself to a hygge experiment. An essential stop, in Nordland County is the Brøstadin Knitnegard, where renowned Norwegian chef Halvard Ellingsen has converted the family farm into a cozy restaurant featuring 20 to 25 courses of imaginative, locally sourced cuisine. The 30-person restaurant has guests remove their shoes at the door and put on warm wool socks to wear while dining, sitting by the fireplace, or you can stare out at the icy sea. The coziest, most Norwegian way to experience Nordland's many beautiful destinations is via the Hurtigruten's Norwegian Coastal Express. The intimate cabins even feature heated bathroom floors, and Ellingsen's signature dishes can be found on board. And then Norwegian site is the Longyearbyen Svalbard in Norway. The remote Svalbard is perched so far north that one has to look south to see the northern lights, so winters here require a healthy dose of hygge to get through it. Fortunately, it's a Norwegian territory and thus imbued with Scandinavian sensibilities that lend themselves to coziness. Book a room at Comfy Chic Funken Lodge for some extended time in front of the lobby fireplace with the polar literature-filled library. If you're willing to brave the very real risk of polar bears with the help of gun-toting guide, a dinner of reindeer stew and lively tales of Arctic exploration at Camp Barents should not be missed. And for the coziest cuddle in all of Longyearbyen, stop by Cafe Huskies, where the well-behaved sled dogs snooze inside. Then we have Newport, Rhode Island. New England winters may be best spent indoors, but Newport, Rhode Island leans into the inclement weather by channeling its hygge side. The Chandler at Cliff Walk runs winter culinary experiences in the property's three heated yurts overlooking the ocean, plus offers an apple cider bar as winter approaches. Many of the Newport's hotels, like the 41 North and the Hydrangea House Inn, maintain the comfortable features of the Gilded Age, such as in-room fireplaces. Besides the lack of northern lights, Newport is the perfect stateside hygge destination. Northern Iceland is our sixth stop. Iceland may have gained independence from Denmark in the 1940s, but this Nordic island still embodies the hygge lifestyle. Throw on an additional lupusash, Icelandic wool sweater, and head north to Deplar Farm on the Troll Peninsula to explore or experience next-level hygge. Despite the intense winters and long nights Iceland is known for, the luxury hotel ensures guests stay warm in-room fireplaces, beds draped in sheepskins, and an open-air geothermal pool. There's also a Viking sauna and a communal hang space with its own fireplace, full library, and plenty of blankets. Telluride, Colorado is our seventh stop. Colorado ski towns are hygge incarnate, and Telluride is one of the best. Surrounded by 14,000-foot peaks and peppered with Victorian architecture, it's almost easy to believe you're actually in Europe. The ski slopes are world-famous, but to really tap into the Scandinavian factor, book a dog sledding experience. Go ice skating in the mountain village, or book a stay at Dunton Townhouse. For extra hygge, add a night at Dunton Hot Springs for their winter wonderland experience, which includes snowshoeing, hot chocolate, and horse-drawn sleds. Our eighth stop is in Gurwood, Alaska. Alaska can feel a world away, especially with the seasons change. Yeska Resort in Gurwood, famous for its ski slopes, opened the state's first Nordic spa, which builds upon the already cozy vibe of the hotel. Built into the surrounding forest, guests can now access ski outdoor hot and cold wooden tubs, two large barrel saunas, and two banya saunas. The design is to encourage connection with nature as a way to embrace winter instead of hiding from it. And our ninth stop, Swedish Lapland. In Sweden, hygge has a double meaning. While they embrace the cozy contentment of their neighbors, it also means cutting area, or the land that remains once trees are cut down. In the Swedish Lapland town of Harads, a new floating spa resort called Arctic Bath channels Sweden's timber industry into a comfortably luxurious place to relax and recharge. Cabins include pellet stoves and heated floors and access to the two outdoor hot tubs that make Northern Lights viewing a truly hygge experience. Wow. Well, have some hygge, friends, and enjoy. Well, from cozy places to spend a winter vacation and satisfy our hygge, we're going to head to Colorado's Rockies, where birds and other animals stand out against the snow, and even if you can't see them. Their tracks will let you know they're around. Writer Elaine Glusak's article, The Quiet Thrill of Winter Wildlife Viewing, appeared in the December 3, 2022 issue of the New York Times. The Clark's Nutcracker, I surmised after observing one in an aspen tree last winter, furiously pecking at a seed, is a determined bird. His sharp beak matched the black wingtips on his pearl-gray body, and white, spectacle-like eye rings seemed to amplify his diligence. The bird is the size of a jay, but on this frigid morning in Aspen, Colorado, he had puffed out his feathers for warmth in a comically plump style. Every day's mission for all the birds that stay here in the winter is to get the calories that they need, said Rebecca Weiss, my birding guide and the author of Birds of Aspen and the Roaring Fork Valley, who leads birding excursions year-round for the conservation and education nonprofit Aspen Center for Environmental Studies, or ACES for short. Most people associate birds and birding with warmer weather, which the animals often chase, but many endemic species stay, and here in the Rocky Mountains, migrants arrive from the more punishing north. In winter, wildlife watchers have the advantage of clearer sight lines after the deciduous leaves have dropped. Birds and other animals often stand out against the white backdrop, making them easier to spot, and even if you can't see them, their tracks let you know they're around. I consider myself a winter obsessive enamored with the transformative effects of snow on the land and the distinct joys of sports that involve sliding on snow and ice. But other than knowing that bears hibernate in winter, I had no idea what the animals we associate with the mountains do in winter, and to find out, I broke up a ski trip to Aston last February to take two different outings with the ACES guides to look for animals, or at least signs of them. Birding in winter. Snow-covered landscapes aren't just a challenge for animals seeking food and shelter, but for their fans. Dressing for the patience required of birding, which usually involves standing still for periods of time to keep from spooking the quarry, requires extra thermal layering. Miss Weiss, the birding guide, modeled the look in a long down coat and a thick-soled, soiled boots when we met near Snowmass Village, about 9 miles west of Aspen, to begin our four-stop tour of different area habitats. Normally, she holds her tours, which cost $25, at Hallam Lake, a 25-acre nature preserve near downtown Aspen, which was under construction last winter, encouraging us to explore elsewhere. At Brush Creek near Snowmass, we spotted the Clark's Nutcracker, along with three kinds of jays, the Stellar's, Woodhouse's Scrub Jay, and the Pinion, and large flocks of chatty, yellow-streaked pine siskins. For beginning birders, fewer species in winter and the tendency of some to flock together like cedar waxwings and red crossbills make it easier to spot and remember them. A coyote walking the freshly groomed cross-country ski trails greeted us at the nearby Snowmass Club golf course, where we scanned a pond for ring-necked ducks, a diving duck with distinctive tattoo-like white, black, and gray bills. They were sharing the ice floes with Crayola bright mallards with vivid orange legs and velvet green heads. Ducks are in breeding plumage in winter, so they're at their finest, Miss Weiss said. We searched for brown-capped rosy finches, which are endemic to Colorado and driven down from the high mountains in winter, at a collection of feeders at a private home nearby in the hills above the Aspen Airport. Miss Weiss is well known among local birders who often allow her access to their feeders. Instead, we found a flock of house finches, another of pine siskins, and a diminutive downy woodpecker. No one knows the exact formula to get rosy finches to their feeders, Miss Weiss remarked of the prize birds, that otherwise spend their time among 14,000-foot peaks, often called 14ers. It's incredible to see a flock of 150 gorgeous high-altitude birds that occur in Colorado and nowhere else in the world, and they're easier to find than to scale a 14er, she said. We ended our tour at Hallam Lake, admiring the fortitude of American dippers bathing in a snow-banked stream. The continent's only aquatic songbird, the dark, plump, fastidious birds are considered a harbinger of clean water. Despite the cold, nearly 4 hours surveying nature sped by. Birding is a super fun way to engage with a landscape and get to know at a deeper kind of meditative level, Miss Weiss summarized. You can forget about everything else as you're watching the birds treasure hunt. Interpreting snow tracks. While snow muffles the terrain, obscuring the specifics of a forest under an insulating blanket, it can be a great revealer. Snow records the frequency of passing animals that so often we, or records the frequency of passing animals that so often we cannot see, their tracks telltale in the impressionable landscape. Interpreting the forest habitat, ACES guides lead nature snowshoe tours departing twice daily in the ski season from Aspen Mountain and nearby Snowmass Ski Area. It's $44 if you have a lift ticket, $75 if you don't. I signed up for the afternoon session at Aspen Mountain, meeting my guide, James Hines, and about a dozen fellow snowshoers at the top of the Aspen Gondola, where a resort photographer pointed out a pair of red crossbills which looked a little like house finches in need of orthodonture in the pines. Like me, most of those snowshoers were seeking some variety in their downhill ski vacation. Several were new to snowshoeing, but quickly gained confidence on the shoes provided by the ACES that strapped onto our boots, keeping us from sinking more than an inch or two atop snowdrifts. Walking in snowshoes kept me warmer than birding. The trade-off, of course, was seeing fewer species up close. But Mr. Hines took a wide-angle perspective on the habitat, leading our march on Richmond Ridge south past the ski lifts near the White River National Forest. He explained the difference between fir trees with flat, fragrant, and friendly needles and spruce, which have square, spiky needles. In the quiet backcountry, we left our oblong imprints in the snow as we puzzled out the comings and goings of animals in the forest. Encountering a meandering single-file trail, we learned to recognize what is known as perfect stepping, in which a four-legged animal, like a fox or coyote, brings a hind leg to step just where the foreleg had pioneered. The right and left side paws land near enough to each other to leave a nearly straight line in the snow. Distinctive four-point patterns in the snow revealed animals like squirrels and hares, known as hoppers, whose small front feet tend to land before the larger back feet. A bounding animal like a weasel, whose back feet touch down so close to the front feet that its passage looks like a series of holes in the deep snow, left an arrangement of tennis ball-sized divots in a direct line. One set of tracks, two parallel lines of small brushing marks over a foot apart, stumped us. After several wrong guesses, pine cones, a pair of mice, our guide helped us to imagine the wings of a bird beating down on a runway of snow before it got off the ground, perhaps because it was weighed down by something in its beak. I imagine a raptor with a mouse. That is the beauty of wildlife watching in winter. We didn't actually see a mink or a fox or a hawk with its prey, but we knew the forest was teeming with them, and the evidence was thrilling. And she has some more tour options in this next section. The first one among the tours with the adventure group in Whistler, British Columbia, snowshoe outings explore ancient cedar forest or begin with a ride to the Heart Country in a off-road vehicle for tramps in the forest. And these tours start at $129.99 Canadian dollars a person. That's about $95 U.S. dollars. Number two, look for bison, fox, and elk, as well as geyser-frosted trees on guided snowshoe tours in the Old Faithful area of Yellowstone National Park with Yellowstone National Park lodges. Roughly three-hour tours take place twice daily from mid-December to early March. Tours with snowshoe rentals cost not $38 a person. The National Park Service also maintains a list of guided ski and snowshoeing operators in the area. Number three, keep an eye out for moose in Stowe, Vermont, where the Sunrise Mountain Guide Service promises snowshoeing adventures off the beaten path in and around the Green Mountain State Forest. Outings range 1 to 3 hours and cost $175 for one person or $325 for four, including snowshoes. Number four, combine a morning of snowshoeing in Grand Teton National Park and an afternoon in safari-style vehicle search for bighorn sheep, elk, eagles, and more on a full-day tour with Jackson Hole Eco Tour Adventures based in Jackson, Wyoming. Tours start at $315 a person. That includes lunch and snowshoes. Number five, in Utah's Wasatch Mountains, Alta Ski Area offers birding on skis to intermediate or higher-level skiers on selective dates from December through April. Experts from Tracy Aviary in Salt Lake City guide the tour to count the birds at the ski area. Participation is free, but skiers must register and have their own ski pass or lift ticket, and day tickets are $154. And number six, go winter birding in northern Minnesota with Wildside Nature Tours, which offers a five-day trip in February out of Duluth, Minnesota, in search of boreal species, including owls, grouse, and waterfowl, mostly from four-wheel drive vehicles. Tours start at $1,850 a person, including accommodations, ground transportation, and guides. Wow, lots of fun in winter, huh? Well, trust us, winter is the best time to go to the Jersey Shore. That's the title of our next article by Amy S. Rosenberg. That story written originally for the Philadelphia Inquirer and also published in the December 11th, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer. The dateline is Ventnor, New Jersey. A taste of winter came early this year, and the reasons to head to the beach in New Jersey quietly blossomed. One day, it was a late summer, local summer, with familiar faces spreading out blankets for their toddlers, dogs welcomed anywhere, surfers and cold water swimmers no longer so rigidly organized and partitioned. If there was a better place to sit and listen to the Phillies on the radio broadcast as they started their epic postseason run with a dramatic six-run ninth inning against St. Louis, cheers going up from isolated beach chairs as the afternoon sun warmed our faces. People running out of houses and onto the boardwalk joyously. I haven't found it. But then the cold weather blew in, and there it was. A reminder of a Jersey Shore winter, another sublime pleasure, especially if you're into walks with dogs and not that many people. Alas, my go-to soundtrack for especially cold evenings, contemplating deep things, was Kanye West 808s and the Heartbreak. Sunset over the Atlantic? Around this time, the declination of the sun has shifted so that at least from Abascon Islands, Atlantic City, Margate, Ventnor, and Longport, a sliver of land which is not precisely parallel to the mainland, you can literally see the sun set from the beach. It's not over the ocean. You'll have to head to the Pacific for those sunset rituals, but it's right in front of you if you're walking generally southward toward Cape May to simplify things. Allow shore weather ace Nor'easter Nick Pittman to explain. The position of the sun certainly changes over the course of the fall and winter, he wrote me over Facebook. It all comes down to perspective and location, he says. On Abascon Island, the sun appears to be setting directly in front of you if you're walking south on the boardwalk, because the island is actually situated northeast to southwest. Most of the other islands are more north to south. That slight jog west makes all the difference as the sun creeps south towards the Tropic of Capricorn, which gives the southern hemisphere their summer. It's not an illusion, just comes down to the islands, how the islands sit geographically, he wrote. Thanks, Nick. It's truly lovely. The sky this time of year is just beautiful. The orange is spreading out like your personal watercolor palette, and the ocean seems a crispy navy blue. Pittman likes heading to Cape May, where the Victorian houses are decorated and ready for the festive season. Many folks think about our shore only during the summer for obvious reasons, but here there are still plenty of things to do during the winter. You just have to be creative, he said. I'm still hoping to see some outdoor ice skating brought to the boardwalk one of these years. Trees on a beach. This year, a developer, Bart Blatstein, imported a 50-foot balsam spruce from North Carolina to put up on the boardwalk near Showboat, a somewhat rare sight on Atlantic City's boardwalk. Blatstein claimed it was the first ever decorated tree on the boardwalk, but the folks at Bartram Avenue have had 30-foot tree in the park along the boardwalk in years past. And truth is, if you're always seeing trees pop up in the sand, people just bring them down here because, well, it's cool to see a Christmas tree on the beach. Weird things are always happening during winter near the beach, like Santa showing up on a lifeguard boat, a tradition that truly charmed me from the start. Margate decorates its Jerome Avenue Park in a beautifully serene way, and in Wildwood, Holly Beach is running light shows every 20 minutes on December 9th, 10th, 16th, and 17th, along with complimentary hot chocolate and popcorn. On Hanukkah, a giant firelit menorah will cast lovely shadows outside the Shabbat in Ventnor as chocolate gelt rains from the sky. And when it snows, as it has a lot in recent years, the beach is a breathtaking palette of grays and whites. People cross-country ski on the boardwalk kids sled and snowboarding down the dunes or down the boardwalk ramps, creative like Nor'easter Nick says. And there's good old winter surfing. That's the sport that never ends. The only thing that changes is the thickness of the wetsuit. Pittman's predicting a more traditional winter down on the shore as opposed to last year when a blizzard and other storms blasted 30-plus inches of snow on beach towns. He's predicting in the range of 8 to 12 inches this year at the shore, and the temperature is 2 to 3 degrees above normal. Personally, I'll root for more snow, and I believe the writer got her wish, huh? It's always a bit of a thrill to see the surfers bobbing in the chilly surf, and of course my dog will go in any time of the year as long as there's a tennis ball involved. Perhaps the most tribal tradition of them all are the various polar bear plunges, most on New Year's Day, sea aisles over President's Day weekend. The trucks come out on the beach, the bathrobes and UGG crowd fortifies itself, and the gang is all there, like it's the middle of July, only better. Lots of fun on the Jersey Shore. Well, no doubt you've heard of the Real ID. It comes from a law adopted by Congress at the request of the Department of Homeland Security. Primary purpose is to promote safety and security in domestic and international airline travel. The deadline for getting a Real ID has already been delayed several times, and as we head into 2023, we're learning that the latest deadline has been pushed back yet again. Deborah Kamen is the writer of our next offer, and is going to offer some details in her article. You've got to be kidding. Real ID deadline for domestic flyers is extended again. This article appeared in the December 5th, 2022 issue of the New York Times. After years of delay, security-enhanced driver's licenses and other updated identification requirements were set to be mandatory next spring. Now the government is giving you another 2 years, writes the subhead. Let's go into the main article. The 2005 Real ID Act, which mandates that U.S. travelers must carry more than a standard driver's license to board a domestic flight, was set to go into effect May 3, 2023, but on Monday, December 5th, after some 15 years of delays, the Department of Homeland Security pushed the deadline for enforcement by an additional 24 months. Travelers now have until May 7, 2025 to update their documents. The Real ID Act is a post-September 11 law that requires U.S. travelers flying within the United States to show the Transportation Security Administration agents either a security-enhanced driver's license or another TSA-approved form of identification like a passport. When the Act eventually goes into effect, the state driver's license that does not contain a Real ID will no longer be accepted at airport security checkpoints across the country. Congress passed the Real ID Act after finding that nearly all of the hijackers who boarded commercial planes on September 11, 2001, were carrying U.S. driver's licenses and state IDs, and that most of those documents had been obtained fraudulently. The Act, which sets minimum standards for driver's licenses and other types of identification cards, was initially intended to take effect in 2008. It has been extended multiple times, including twice during the COVID-19 pandemic. The most recent rollout has often been marked by confusion. While real IDs show the applicant has been screened and approved by federal standards, the cards are issued by individual states, U.S. territories, except American Samoa, which is under review, and the District of Columbia. Processes for applying vary from state to state, and that includes North Carolina. And the physical look of the card varies, too. Real ID cards are marked by a star, but its placement is inconsistent. So you just need to check with your state DMV to learn more about your real ID, but you do have some time to get one. And that, my friends, brings us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. I hope you've enjoyed the journey and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I must remind you that the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That website again, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.